Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
Welcome back. Today we're going to talk about the achievement gap. And the achievement gap is a phenomenon that we've been talking about for decades.
Decades.
Since the 60s, 70s, at least. Mm-hmm. And the achievement gap is the phenomenon of the significant disparity between the achievement of minority children and white Caucasian children.
You know, I really don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the history of this issue because I really don't know if anybody worried about it in the 40s mm-hmm. or even in the 50s.
Right.
I think people began to become concerned when we desegregated schools because we saw this huge racial imbalance, racial difference. And of course, in the 1970s, when we began to include students with specific challenges, handicapping conditions, I don't know that it was an issue prior to that. I'll have to go back and look at that.
We're pulling a lot of information from this webpage from the University of Pennsylvania entitled Rethinking the Achievement Gap, and it's written by one of their faculty, Andy Porter.
And I think he's actually a dean of the college.
Is he?
Yeah, I think he's an administrator in the College of Education.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it says he teaches psychometrics and some other things, but He kind of starts with a nice little history of it and how Christopher Jenks, is an E, so it's like, it could be...
You want Barbara Jinx.
Jar Jar Binks.
No, so, but see, he starts in the 60s, the 60s, so it leads one to believe that maybe this wasn't an issue before that.
Right.
But certainly it is. And Jenks was actually an economist.
Right. A sociologist who was looking at income tax, and he was looking at how the income disparity. Mm-hmm. And I think it's critical that we start with that point. Right. You know, many times when people think about the achievement gap, and we mentioned this earlier this week, mm-hmm. that many times when we think about these kinds of disparities, we immediately go to race and ethnicity and some of those things. But the primary predictor of some of these issues is poverty, socioeconomic status. Now, unfortunately, more minorities live in poverty. A disproportionate amount of minorities live in poverty. So there is that relationship. Right. But, you know, there's nothing, and this goes back to remember the book, the Bell Curve?
I was trying to think of the authors of that book.
Yeah.
They were both Harvard professors.
Right.
And they talked about the Bell Curve. That was the title of the book, the Bell Curve. Mm-hmm.
And it was, there was a great deal of controversy that came out about that. Right. But, you know, the idea that simply being a minority automatically puts you in this lower category, we know is just not true.
It's not a race issue.
Right.
Porter points out in this article that study after study after study after study, the best research that we've done indicates that genetically there is no difference.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So it's not a question of biology.
Right.
Certainly.
Yeah. It's a manifestation of poverty and, you know, those early learning experiences and the cultural climate as it relates to the neighborhoods in which these people grow up. And so it has nothing to do with race or ethnicity, not genetically, not biologically. It has more to do with the nature or the nurture part of that nature-nurture debate.
Right. And this achievement gap, and I was glad that one of the things Porter did is let's define it accurately.
Right.
Okay. But what he's talking about here is that if you think of a normal distribution of individuals, there's a lower 25%.
Right.
Okay. And there will always be a lower.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter how high the scores are, there will still be lower scores.
Right.
Okay. The problem in our country is that when you have universal education your goal is to educate every student, some of those students are going to underachieve. And so we have always had this group of underachieving students.
Right.
It has become of greater concern since the 1960s.
Right.
And efforts have been made to close what then became known as the achievement gap.
Right.
How do you get these lower achieving students to achieve at a higher level?
Right.
And there's this gap between the higher achieving students and the lower achieving students. And the lower achieving students, a larger percentage of those lower achievement students were students of color.
Right.
But it's not race that's the issue.
Right.
What we're learning is that it's poverty,
right,
mainly, and lack of opportunity.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's, I think, at the root of this. So we have to keep that in mind as we're going through some of these things that we're going to talk about today. And I think that your point is really important as it relates to there will always be low-achieving students.
That's right. Even in a medical school,
right,
there's somebody who has the lowest performance.
Right.
Still well-educated.
Right.
But lower than the the U.S. military academies.
Mm-hmm.
They're all bright guys. I mean, you couldn't complete West Point if you weren't competent.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But there is a, you know, Ulysses S. Grant, I think, graduated last in his class.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still a smart guy.
Yeah. And I've mentioned before, you know, my own experience in graduate school where, you know, I was one of the, because of my work in the Department of Psychiatry before I went before I went to graduate school, you know, I began my graduate program with a thesis topic. I was taking thesis hours. We had, you know, 22 credit hours our first semester of graduate school, and, you know, 9 credit hours was full time. We had 22 hours and all this. And by the end of my first year, one of the professors, I made a B in her class. And so she told my major professor that she was concerned as to whether or not I was a good fit for the program.
Right.
You know, meanwhile, I was doing research and I was working in the Department of Psychiatry and had 2 kids at home and all this other stuff. And I made a B.
Underachieving.
It was difficult for her to imagine that I just didn't like her class. I didn't. It was not a very engaging class because it was, you know, I liked some of her later classes, but not that first class, and I had other things to do. But, you know, everybody else was making an A's, and so I made a B, and so I wasn't a good fit because I would then have been considered a low-achieving student for her class. But luckily, I talked to my major professor, and he was like,
"Don't worry about it.
You can stay."
All right. Oh, good.
I was like,
and we're delighted.
I was like, "Thank you, sir." We're still good pals.
Yeah.
So, but again, the point is that, you know, even if everybody was performing above average right now,
that's right, you'd still,
we would change the expectations such that even everybody performing above average, there'd be some performing well above average and some performing just below above average.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's always going to be, and that was the problem with No Child Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you come out and you say, every child will be reading at a third grade level by the time they finish third grade, you're setting yourself up to fail.
Right.
Because as soon as something like that comes close to happening, we're going to say, man, if all of these kids can read at this level at third grade, that must be too low. And so we need to raise the standards a little bit for third grade because, man, these kids we should really be pushing these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you do that, more kids are not going to meet those expectations. And so we're always going to have those students who perform below average, expectations.
Right.
So,
but in our economy, the way the economy is going, 2 generations ago, maybe the reason this wasn't an issue prior to the 1960s or 70s is that in a manufacturing economy, it didn't matter what your educational. If you chose not to go on to college, even if you chose not to get a high school diploma, in the 1940s and 50s, it wasn't as big a disadvantage.
Right.
Because there were jobs, very good jobs, with high salaries and benefits.
You could still go in the military.
That's right. You could go in the military. You could go into manufacturing plants. I mean, where I grew up between Youngstown and Pittsburgh, you always could get a job in one of those steel mills because they were always looking for workers.
Right.
And these were high-paying jobs with good benefits. My uncles did that. And they had a very good middle-class lifestyle.
Right.
Those jobs, those kinds of jobs don't exist anymore. You know, I always laugh when they say unemployment is at an all-time high or we've added 300,000 jobs to the economy. Yeah, they're part-time jobs at minimum wage.
Right.
They're not high-paying manufacturing jobs like we had in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And so the achievement gap probably wasn't as critical in that economy as it is in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this economy, you have to be highly trained.
Right.
Okay. And so it does matter if you're in that 25%.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, we're already 10 minutes into this podcast. We haven't even got to the good stuff yet.
Well, okay. Because I know why this is happening. So.
Why?
But we'll get to that in a minute.
Tell us why.
No. Where does the achievement gap begin?
It begins early.
Begins at birth.
Right.
That's right. It begins at birth. The kids who are underachieving, regardless of color, the children who are underachieving in school begin that underachievement at birth. They probably begin, it probably begins at conception.
Right.
Because if you get good prenatal care and you have an uneventful pregnancy, you're going to do, the outcome is probably going to be better.
Right.
But the achievement gap begins at birth because if you are exposed to standard English books, reading, structure, discipline, boundary, all those things that we do to prepare kids for kindergarten, those students do better than students who are not exposed to those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason that happens is because of brain growth periodization.
Right.
Because at age 2.5, we have this explosion of new neurons.
Yeah.
And the ones you use, you're going to keep.
Right.
And the ones you don't use, you're going to lose.
Right.
And so from 2.5 until elementary school, the students who are exposed, stimulated, challenged, high expectations, hearing standard English, they keep all those neurons. The students who live in an impoverished environments don't, and they lose all those neurons.
Right.
The brains are different by the time they get to kindergarten.
Right. And this is where there starts to be some gray in the poverty versus non-poverty bipolarity that we've been talking about, that we've sort of suggested. If you live in poverty, but the parents have a very high education or they have a strong education, they have a very good vocabulary,
they
communicate, they read, those kids tend to do better than, you know, kids who are similarly demographic, but the parents have a poor vocabulary and they don't read and things like that. This comes out of Joe Torgerson's, for example, his research a couple decades ago, where he was looking at the fact that in, you know, when you look at the discrepancies across socioeconomic status, kids who grow up in poor environments and, you know, typically, individuals who grew up in poor environments, the parents are less educated and they have a lower vocabulary.
Right.
Kids who grow up in middle and upper class have a stronger vocabulary by the age of 8, I think it is, than the parents of kids who grow up in poverty.
That's right.
They've heard millions of more words.
Millions of, that's right.
And they, you know, so, and unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to think about it, educational achievement is closely married to vocabulary.
It's the single best the best predictor of academic achievement is verbal IQ.
Right.
Okay. That's the single strongest predictor.
Right.
So the better your vocabulary, the better you are with the language, the higher your achievement will be.
Right. So all that stuff about, you know, pushing parents to read to their kids and to read to their little ones, you know, from the time they're still in utero, there is some basis for that.
That's right. Ben and Sally Shaywitz, who are at the Child Study Center at Yale, have statistics on this of how many more words children in privileged environments hear than children in impoverished environments.
Yeah.
So they come to school with a different vocabulary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Children in poverty don't have the vocabulary that children in privileged environments bring.
Right.
So you have this immediate difference on the first day of kindergarten.
Right.
as children progress through school, if you live in a wealthy neighborhood, mm-hmm. you tend to have better schools mm-hmm. and better teachers.
Right.
So you have the advantage of a good teacher. There's a study that was done years ago. If you have two bad teachers, but mm-hmm. if you have two years in a row yeah. where you don't get adequate instruction, you never catch up.
Right.
You lose that time right. and you never catch up.
Yeah.
Where are those schools? They're in the high poverty
right.
districts.
For many of the reasons we talked about on Tuesday's podcast
right.
this week.
Right.
Yeah.
How we tax schools.
Funding. Yeah.
And then the other thing is the summer mm-hmm, mm-hmm. thing. Children of privilege read, they go on vacation, they learn things,
right.
they're exposed to things, and they increase their reading level gradually over the summer.
Right.
Children in poverty stop reading, stop traveling, mm-hmm. stop going anywhere, and they actually lose time.
Mm-hmm.
So while the children of privilege gain
over those 2 months,
gain achievement over the 3 month summer vacation, they're a little bit ahead. Children from impoverished environments lose.
Yeah.
So they begin each school year uneven.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, but it's not, it has nothing to do with race.
Right.
Except
right.
that people of color tend to be poor.
Right. Disproportionately.
Know, underemployed.
Yeah. So there's, yeah. I mean, we've tried a lot of different things.
We've tried to fix this. But what we're saying here is that the problem is biology. It's poverty. You know, I mean, the problem is poverty. But so the solution, but we've tried to make the solution education.
Right.
Okay. And I think that's what Porter, that's the
right.
point that Porter's making in this article, is that we are asking schools to solve an economic,
right.
what is a fundamentally an economic problem.
Right. Yeah. Because when you look at things like, you know, we have all these reforms that we've tried,
that's
whether
right.
it's preschool reforms with like Head Start and some of those kinds of programs,
mm-hmm.
Teacher reforms, standards reforms, all those different things. The research has pretty consistently demonstrated that despite all those attempts, the achievement gap continues.
We have done desegregation. We've mm-hmm. done special education classes. We've done ability grouping. You know,
right.
let's put the high achiever, let's give these kids what they need. You know, the
right.
idea that, well, let's give them the skills that they need and maybe that will catch
mm-hmm.
them up.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've done this reform since the 1960s,
right.
about every decade, there's another set of reforms.
Right.
The most, the one we know the best was No Child Left Behind.
Right.
That's standards-based. You know, we're gonna raise the standard and we're going to make every kid get to that standard. And the greatest, the best analogy I heard was standards-based education is like a planned economy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you say you're going to achieve a certain level doesn't mean you're going to get there.
Right.
And that's what happened with standards-based. We're
right.
going to have every child reading.
Mm-hmm.
You can set whatever standard you want.
Right.
That doesn't mean you're going to get there.
Absolutely.
We don't know how to get there.
Right.
And so none of what Porter's saying is that none of these solutions
mm-hmm.
has been effective
right.
because the problem is not an educational problem. It's a poverty problem.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so we have to, you know, until we have some balance
right.
in that area, you know, mm-hmm. we're going to continue to struggle.
Right.
So
if a country's public policies are that we will tolerate poverty
mm-hmm.
in whatever form,
right.
I mean, we talk about income distribution, income inequality.
Right.
If your country is willing to tolerate poverty, what Porter's saying is then you have to tolerate underachievement because until you get rid of poverty, you're probably not going to get rid of underachievement.
Right, right.
You won't close the achievement gap.
Yeah. So it's a massive issue in education,
right.
and it doesn't look as though it's going to go away anytime soon.
Not with educational endeavors.
Not the way things are now.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Okay, good.
That's it for today then, right?
That's it.
All right. Tomorrow we're going to present our topic on sort of in our longer podcast.
Right.
We're going to talk a little bit more about our ideas related to school safety and preventing school violence and some of those kinds of things. So
right.
make sure you are back with
yeah.
us tomorrow for
our
that.
Model, our humble proposal
yeah.
about what I think we can contribute, psychology can
yeah.
contribute. To the issue of school safety.
Absolutely. So, until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We'd be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.